Do you feel emotionally connected to your plants? As if in the process of caring for them, they as well are caring for you? What about planty DIYs and thrifting for plant items? If I have your attention, then the Plants by Wade Lee podcast is for you. Join me, plant friends, as we dig deep and experience the magic of plants. Hey, plant people, thank you so much for tuning in to the 10th episode of the Plants by Wade Lee podcast. I have Derek Haynes, the chocolate botanist, on Instagram. You know him from debunking the craziest myths and things that you hear in the planty world. I mean, we could go on and on. I have a list right here. You said we ice cakes, not plants.
I did say that.
Yeah.
I did say that. You pays attention, I tell you what.
Of course, of course. I mean, I follow you and I love your content. I think that some of it, I'm like, what? Did you just pull something out of the vacuum cleaner and you're going to put it in the soil? I got to keep watching this.
You be watching everything I do. A lot of stuff that people wouldn't necessarily think about is compostable, right? And although I don't recycle as much as the 90s childhood me thought I would be at this point, because right. I thought that I would have been like a representative of the Planeteers, obviously Kwame the Black One, and even though I preferred my tea, because I was like, hurt, you know, the animals, but I would have been doing something like that, and I don't recycle as much as I do, but I compost what I can, and especially when I'm like, instead of sending this out to waste, to be in a plastic bag, and whatever nutrients are stuck in the soil, dog hair, vegetation I dropped on the ground, let me compost that and recycle that back into nature as I can.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to be rude when you were talking, but I was looking down because there was something that I wanted to ask you about, and it was the... I don't know the word because I had never heard of it before, Derek, until I saw it today. It's the composting with meats and stuff? Yeah, wait, what? One more time?
Bokashi.
Bokashi. So yeah.
Let's mention it because I have the bag right here. So this is how you spell the word bokashi. Oh. You know, and basically... you are able to compost, like, not necessarily like a butcher's mart of meat, but you're able to do not that are not traditionally used in a traditional compost pot. So I can do dairy, I can do oil and grease, I can do a little bit of meat here and there. As big as I am, I don't leave much meat on the bone when I eat. But if you do, then, you know, you got a problem.
No, look at my size. I mean, I'm a big boy too, so...
Look, I'm going to say, if you eat a chicken wing and there's still meat on that bone, there's a problem, okay? Right. I see the people, they take two bites and they're like, done. Nope, there's still meat up there. Stop playing. But regardless of that, you can do that. And I've done it, and I have a couple of them beside me. One drum actually beside me right now that was going. It's a cool process to do inside the house, and it's relatively cheap to start. Like, you can buy some setups or just make some setups. It's not even that expensive.
So it's not like you're just your leftover T-bone you're throwing into this bag. Like, it's not that kind of meat.
So it is, but it's something where what I'm doing now is I'm trying to figure out, without being too much of a hoarder as I can be, how to utilize most of the food waste I can back into my garden, my patio outside. Mm. And the plants I have indoors, right? So with some bones and things of that nature, you can do it. If I had a yard, and one day, God bless it, I will, and I had, like, you know, the acreage I plan on having weighed, then for sure I would put the bone in there and go from there. Now, the bone isn't going to break down in the 2 weeks that you usually set up your compost bin, you know, 2 weeks to a couple of months. It's something that will break down over time once you bury those scraps. And, you know, the bokashi, the microorganisms, and all that does is work. And for those of you who are wondering, bokashi is a microorganism. It's a practice, really, where you take these granules that are inoculated with these microorganisms that can break down your dairy, your meat, your oil, and your other food scraps. And the general concept is, when you're composting outdoors, you want the microorganisms that are breaking down and composting your vegetables, your plant scraps, whatever, to outcompete, to be more in abundance than the ones that are making rot go on. So the way I think about it is, if I go to a club, right, and I go to a club, and I'm going to make it about race because people never want to talk about race. I'm going to make it about race. People are going to get pissed off. I don't care. Send me the death threats. Do it, okay, in my chat, on the comments of my post to make my engagement go up. But if I go into a club that may be of a different culture than me, right, one that is in Asia, okay, I'm not going to necessarily hear the Anita Baker I want to hear when I'm in a club, okay, even if they are people that listen to that generation, right? So they're out-competing me for musical choices because they're going to make different references that I may not get or I may get and be like, ah, whatever. And there is a chance that somebody may be like, play That Sweet Love by Anita Baker. But outside of that, it may not happen, right? In that similar way, we have these Bokashi granules, these in these inoculated situations, so we can have what we want to be more in abundance and break down the dairy, the meat, and the oil, right? And that way it doesn't go rancid, it doesn't smell bad. You have it in an anaerobic environment where you're basically keeping air from touching the top of it. It's a whole little setup. You're draining off the juice and everything. And once you get it, the bucket full, and it's sat for 2 weeks, you bury this outdoors in your garden space, in your yard, wherever it is, or add it to your regular compost. And from there, it continues to break down. So I've used some in, because I'm wild and I'm crazy. I do a lot of wild stuff. I have soil in the second bedroom. I'll mix it into there to allow it to break down. Because I recycle soil, and I used to work at a place where I used to get so much soil, I never buy really soil anymore. I just buy components and stuff I may need. So I'm just adding it in, and then I try to give a lot of this away. If you live closer, you would get a lot of soil from me.
I love that.
Chip it away so I can like get to a reasonable amount of soil in this house.
So this goes to my next question, because we see a lot, like the debunking that you do about just throwing your eggshells and your bananas on, you know, your garden. This isn't breaking it down and making it, you know, making it feed into the soil, right?
No. So when you take your eggshells and you just sprinkle them on top of your soil, like y'all's cousin Hamilton tells y'all to do, what they're not shooting pirates that take these videos with AI voices and they repost them up. What happens is the people don't tell you the true science of it all, right? Over time, those eggshells and banana peels on the top of the soil will eventually break down, right? But there's more likely for there to be, depending on your situation, rot or attracting of other pests to come out, right? If you're just taking shells and you're not sanitizing them and washing them properly, you may attract certain rodents that most of us don't want to deal with around your stuff. Similar to banana peels, the rodents are going to be like, look at what this human did for me. And be like, let me go out here and eat it. Versus if you go and place it under the soil while certain rodents may still dig up and be all in your garden. It's putting it where it needs to be, right? And it's setting it up to be composted and broke down if it's buried under the soil. But even then with eggshells, it takes time for that calcium to be released. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. So I recently did a video because I've been seeing the whole feed the bananas. Bananas are big feeders. And I was watching your videos and I was like, I'm doing this exact same thing. Like, I put everything that I should have thrown out of my refrigerator into the blender, blended it up, and then I poured it on. I have the reel on my Instagram right now. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to come clean about this to Derek because... But, or is that okay? Like, because I see, you know, I see a lot of farmers are just putting it into the, you know, back into the earth.
I'm not going to say these people ain't farmers because I don't know who it is. And maybe they do have a farm license and they've been farming forever. But Dr. Dre called himself doctor and I wouldn't get no prescriptions from him, right? So when it comes to what some of these farmers are doing and some of our elders have done historically, right, who were using agriculture as a means of survival, not just financial, but actually I need to feed my families. I need to make sure we can eat and be able to can and everything else of that nature. They used every piece of what they had trying to put it back in, so there was no love lost, no nutritional loss. And some of that stuff wasn't as effective as they said it was. It was just over time, if you do something wrong for 10 years and it kind of eventually makes itself right in the 11th year, you're going to be like, yay, everything is good, right? When it comes to you blending up your scraps, the thing I'll say is, if you are blending it up into a smoothie, a compost smoothie, we'll call it that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You are putting it outdoors into your compost pile. That would help it to be more easily broken up and digested and made into compost by your microorganisms, because you're literally like making it already easily attainable and shrinking that surface area of whatever that vegetation was, right?
Right, right.
If you are saying, I take this stuff and then I lather it all over my soil, then that, my friend, unfortunately, is not as beneficial as we would like it to be. It's not really overwork, because again,
even if you're working it into the soil,
even if you work it into the soil, because what happens is, if you are, I generally have a plant around me that I can move and show this off with. If you are, I need one. I have so many plants around me. We're going to use this sad example right here. This sad example is a ZZ, okay? This, yeah. If I work this into the soil, right, and I'm working it, those microorganisms are going to be like, yay, but it's going to take some time for them to break all of that down. And the thing about a compost pile, when you're putting it out there is, think about the club situation I talked about. If you go into the club and there's one jam you got to hear, what's that one song you want to hear when you walk into the club? You say, I got to, but there's already 50 people in line who are asking for every other song that you don't want to hear, or that you've already heard before, or that you're like, dang, this song makes me sad, I'm going to leave, this club ain't popping. It's that same situation. When you are putting that stuff, even if you're working into the soil, you are letting the opportunity for the good microbes and the bad microbes to compete. And for some of you who are out there listening and watching, the good microbes won, luckily enough for you, and your plants didn't rot and die, right? But for some of the rest of you, your plants went up to the upper room. Okay,
right.
They is up there with Aretha Franklin and Tina Turner, okay, rolling down the river. They might as well be, because you sold them up river and you put all that stuff in there, and they end up attracting rotten mold. I mean, rotten mold are fungi. That fungus is near your roots. It's going to do what mold does, which is, I want to break all of this down, turn this into what I want to turn it into. And when all of that stuff, including your roots, those precious roots that are supplying your plants with the water they need, are broken down, you end up saying, well, why is my plant dead? In addition to, some of us do this, and you do it indoors or you do it outdoors, and you're like, where did all these fungus gnats come from?
Yeah. The
like, dinner, yay! And then you go out.
Yeah.
They eat.
Yeah, I don't know if you know Rachel Tenney. She has the Plant School podcast. She's so lovely, but she had gotten the Lumi, right? That's what it's called, the Lumi. And that's the thing that happened. She got the compost, put it on her houseplants, and she's like, wait, in days there were so many fungus gnats. And it's like,
it dries it out.
Yeah, it's the dehydrator right? system. Yeah. But this is what's happening. You're just throwing, you know. So I'm just getting bugs in Florida, like, and on this, my banana tree.
And this is where, when you get these bugs, like the Lumi, the electrical ones, I don't have a lot of it right now. If any electrical composting system wants to send me one and I do a video, I'll do that. So, you know, if you're listening, hit me up in my DMs. But I try that at home, because the general concept is, you dry out the vegetation to plant parts, whatever it is, to get it to pretty much like dehydrated.
Outside or in close to a window. So with the heat and you're
I did it in the oven. So I dried everything out in the oven, because I was like, so I'm a whole plant biologist, and this is like literally my degree, right?
Right.
I'm a scientist. I've worked in the field, and there's been times where I've had to say, for myself at home and for the work I've done, what am I trying to do, and how can I use what I have to get what I need, right? Whether it's a program on a computer to control a greenhouse, or whether it is there's this equipment that we want and we can't afford it, so let's break it down into components. The components of an electrical composter are you're drying something out, and as it's drying out, this one machine, it's grinding it down eventually into a fine powder. They don't really consider that compost. They say you can now like put it on top of the soil humus, or you can bury it under the soil. I've done some reading on some of these products that I was like, one day I'm about. I dried everything out in the oven. I have my blender here, blended it all down into a dust, and then I added it to my bokashi and or I mixed it into soil that I had. Now, I have to be careful because I do know, again, I'm setting this up to have an abundance of organisms that I may not want, the fungi, the fungus gnats, whatever it is, rummaging over my plants. So when you're setting this up, I described it like a club, but it's also like when you have a family gathering or a party, and there's that one friend that never brings nothing, but they leave out with three plates, okay? We all got one in our life.
Yes, we do.
Now, they only bring cutlery. They bring you they picked up from the Dollar Tree, or they had in their car from when they went to the McDonald's. And from there, they leave with 10 plates. The number done went up. And you like, how did I get them here? Because you done put it on the group chat, and they in there. You keep forgetting about the group chat. And when you put all this compost that is this compost edge into your soil, you're group chatting, hey, gnats, hey, fungus flies, hey, mold, come and see me.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It is.
But we're seeing it all over social media, you know, the craziness of it.
It is like glitter.
Yeah.
If you touch glitter once in your life, there will always be some amount of glitter on your person and in your house. And it's unfortunate because there are so many people who then spread that glitter because they believe it.
Yeah. If
a person like myself comes through and I'm like, hey, that's not real because of science. They're like, nope, because my great granddaddy's uncles, nephews, next door neighbors, tomcats, owner, told
me. Have been doing it for decades.
Been doing this for 20,000 years and it worked. I'm like, well, they could tell you anything. Just believe them, that random person. But it's a story out that resonates with them, and that's difficult to shake. And that's how these people get their rocks off, unfortunately, by sharing these falsities that resonate with people.
Yeah. Throwing orange peels down for pesticide. Is that
I've done it before, and I try to share, like, hey guys, I've done some of these things before myself. So I'm not just being like, you're stupid or blah, 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 blah. I've done a lot of these things before because I fell into it or I thought about something. The oranges, the citruses of it all, those things in that citrus family do produce some oils that can be or prevent, ward off certain insects. Now, not every insect that these oranges ward off want anything to do with your plants in a negative way. Mosquitoes just may land on your plant as a little perch, but they want to mostly be bothered with somebody that has blood, right? But there's a smell that these things can put off, and there is a way. And a good friend of mine, Josie of the Black Sea Saving Collective, she has made, like, I think it was a hydrosol or some extract where she did use it to get rid of, like, fire ant.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as simple as I just take orange peels, put them in the water, and I spread the water. It's done. Right? It's a whole process to take what's in the peels that are actually beneficial for what we want, which is to prevent a pest, not just a random insect, but a pest, to use that to say, okay, now that we've used that, now that we got that out, let's now put it in. So it's kind of, it's nuanced.
Yeah.
It's nuanced.
Do you use any insects in your collection to, like, pest
biocontrols,
killer bugs? You do or no? The bad bugs.
Biocontrols. I don't use any.
Biocontrol bugs.
I've seen some videos and some posts on the Facebook of people say, at least, you know, ladybugs into their house and, you know, mantises into their house. And God bless those people because I want to do it. If I run into a bug problem, it's usually an insecticide, a pesticide, or I'll do a cultural control. So fungus gnats, they like a wet soil. I'll let the plants dry out as long as I can. And then that's a cultural control because I'm shifting the environment to interrupt the life cycle.
Yeah. Switching gears a little bit, if you get a new plan, what do you have a little bit of a routine that you do before you introduce the plant into your collection, or do you just?
I don't.
Yeah.
I know some of you. There's a good friend of mine, Soul Sister Plants, Lucretia, who she'll kind of quarantine her plants. Her and Camille, the plant nerd, they've talked about quarantining their plants.
Yeah. From
this because, when, frankly, when you get a plant from a plant shop, especially one you've never been to before, you don't know what they got, okay? You can't spread in your house open to any and everything because you don't know where they been, okay?
Oh, that's true.
That's a life lesson you can apply to other things. I'm not going to tell the people in case you... Okay, but the adults, they know what we're talking, you see? So what I typically do is if I've gone to a place that has left me burnt, we're using these STI language, that has left me burnt by a plant, by some bug, some insect, then I'm like, yeah, never again. And again, I work to ID that pest, whatever it is, mealy bugs, spider mites. Those are the two I've typically dealt with. And from there, I'll shoo it away. But luckily enough, I've been fortunate enough to not have gotten them from a plant that I've brought in.
Yeah, so that's good.
Anyways, if there's something that you do, some of you are like, hey, I don't know. You set it in a still well-lit place or a place that it can be habitable in, but away from other plants. Let it sit there for a week or two. Look at the plant. Really get a deep look. Make sure there's not any craziness popping off. And then once you're, okay, there's not a lot of bugs, go there. But I'm also, Wade, one of the people that when I'm in the plant store, I'm rifling through the plants like I own the place. Because why not?
Yeah, what they gonna do?
Yeah. What they gonna do to me, Wade?
I mean, sometimes I love the plant so much that I just put it on the shelf. I just sit and look at it. I'm like, I should probably quarantine. But I use the Plantanista, this pest house plant spray that has neem oil in it. So I just kind of spray that down and then give it a good bath and... She's fine. They're all. I don't really have a bug problem. I think too because I live in Florida, and it's. I mean, there's so many toads and frogs and birds in here that like, they eat the bugs, right? I mean,
They would eat enough insects, but I think the thing about you people that live in Florida, and California, which makes me sick, is I think your plants can grow so beautifully that you may not necessarily even know. I've been eyeing this. I'm going to call it out. Y'all see how big that monastery is behind them?
And this is just a cutting, too. It's just, like, growing.
Show off. This is just a cutting, Derek. Ooh, you can't grow plants.
Yeah, I mean, I burnt her a little bit because I left her outside in the sun too much. I mean, Derek, she was so green and beautiful. Glowing. Like, talking about her skin earlier.
Yes.
And your skin. My skin just looks greasy.
Both of our skin. Look, don't do that to your skin. And that face was green.
But, yeah, it's a blessing to be here.
I'm jealous, but y'all have your plants are able to sometimes outcompete, and out of and what I'm trying to say, the environment can be set up in such where the pests may not necessarily have to worry about hiding elsewhere, right? During winter months, I haven't seen it in a while, but even though this is not necessarily a plant pest, it is a pest to me. Cockroaches, wood roaches will sometimes run into this place. Because it's so god awful cold outside, they're like, "Let me hide in this warm apartment where this human must want me to be in."
Yeah. Heaven
no. So I try to. So that's a different thing that we have to deal with. But I think it's you probably just take good care of your plants, and that's why you don't see them.
I try to.
You're
sweet, sweet baby. I know. I sell plants, and I just have such a hard time releasing them. I'm like, I'm going to sell you, and then I just I can't.
That's why I can never do it. People who said, Derek, you should get a plant shop. No. Any plant I'm aware of is now mine. Unless I hate it. Like this one back here. I don't think you can see it. This one right here. This.
Why do you hate it?
This Ficus umbellata is Ficus in general. That genus outside of like the traditional like purple figs we eat outside. They are so freaking temperamental to say. I can't stand it. So my sister bought this plant. I talk about it every chance I get to basically say, I told you so. My sister bought this plant and she wanted, I said, ficuses are very much temperamental. Gunter's greenhouse in Durham was growing. It had the biggest, most beautiful leaves, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We took it out. I was like, well, it's not going to like drafts. She had just moved into her house. She put it into the house, and it started, when it's like, I don't like it here, it'll just drop leaves.
Yeah, and how cold does it get where you're at?
In North Carolina, we can definitely get to freezing and sometimes below, right?
Yeah, like numerous days in a row.
Yeah, we can be like 30s in weeks of the 30s, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But it's also sometimes below 70 degrees, you know, 64, 65, 60, we're in the 68, 60. So
yeah,
cold, it was drafty. It was trying to keep the humidity up. I bought it in here. I got it growing. I was going to give it back. I moved it 2 feet to mop the floor. It dropped all its leaves in like a week.
Yeah, it's
it was 2 feet. It was like from right here to right where the stand is. 2 feet. So I now have it where it's in a state of I'm not going to do anything. I have a humidifier. Sometimes I boil water, and I'll get the humidity up in the whole house.
Yeah.
I hate this demon, and one day I'm going to get rid of it.
Derek, how many plants do you have in your jungle inside?
You want the truth or a lie?
The truth. Why would I want to lie?
I underestimate, and you indoor, outdoor.
I think all. How many plants you care for?
200 on a good day, 500 on a bad day.
Yeah, yeah. I love that.
Because a lot of things have died, so it's probably closer to 200. And a lot of things outdoors just haven't came up yet. And I have like a lot of tomatoes in here and other cuttings. So especially once I start propagating, it can go up to 500 because sometimes I do a little too much.
Yeah. Well, and you're always doing something like propagating something or trying something new, right?
To a certain extent, yeah.
Yeah.
The trying stuff new, when I worked during the day, I would do a lot of repotting. I would try to give like a lot of propagations away. I have family who loves plants. An aunt of mine, she loves plants, and there's a pot I won in an auction. I'm gonna repot some stuff up for her. Some of my church family, they know I have plants, so they're like, hey, they'll come to me now. They're like, Derek, I seen this plant and it looks like this, and I name it off, and they're like, how do you know? They take pictures of plants and send them to me because they want to know what it is and where to get them. So I'm like the local plant dealer, and I love it. So I just take care. It's a lot, and I love it. It makes me happy. It brings me joy.
Yeah, I love that. So with that, do you feel like you have an emotional connection to plants?
I have. We just talked about it. I couldn't sell plants if I tried because I would be like, if it was enough plants, I'd be like, oh, okay. Like, I've worked in a place where I grew and took care of, and over time, maybe like a million or so plants, like literal million, and that's a lowball number of plants.
Yeah.
So if it's something where it's like, oh, okay, like I'm not going to make a personal connection with you all where I can't stand to let you go, but they all were my children. They were all like, okay, what's going on? How could I fix you? What's going on? Oh, we lost those two out of 20,000. That's a little sad, but it's going to be okay. Like, it's something else. And here at home, especially when I'm like, oh, no, like one of my children has been, you know, discarded. Right. Some of my kids are not doing too well. I've moved plants around and rearranged groups to be like, okay, all of you are aeroids. I can flood this area. It'll be super humid for a couple of days and y'all will be okay. This is the snake plants. I don't have to bother y'all as much. So yeah. I literally love these babies, and each of them brings me something beautiful. Like the indoor beauty is all year. So when I'm sad and down, usually around my birthday and Christmas time, I can be peace. And during my birthday is the summer, outdoors, I can look around at whatever flowers I'm growing, whatever herbs I'm growing, whatever, you know, things I have on the patio, and use those and then talk to other people about them and get some joy out of it. So they all bring me, and the outdoor ones, seeds from them. I can get some seeds. Here's some cabbage collards. Take them. Here's a couple of things. I got them. Like, it's something that's beautiful to me to be able to do, and how they can bring me joy. So I definitively connect with my plants. They my children. But when it comes to, in a seriousness, there's people who can say, like, Derek, you got me into doing something with plants because you gave me my first plant. Now, I don't remember what I gave them. There's some people like, you remember that plant you gave me? I don't. Right. Ever giving you a plant. But because of who I am, and I'm very giving and I love plants, I'm pretty sure I gave you a plant. I'm pretty sure I bought you one, right? And it's something I've paid before. So for me, it's literally me saying, I love this thing so much. Let me show you this thing I love, right? These things are so cool to me. These plants are so cool to me. Let me show you this. And whether it's a plant, some people, they'll never take a plant from me. So I'll be like, okay, I'll make you an infused honey with some random herb, right?
Yeah.
They don't take that, and they made like a kombucha. I make kombuchas and sodas. I have
scoby. Yes, yes. I see this. I mean, you fermented and everything.
I do. I got them. I got some things on the counter right now. There's people who want.
And they'll explode. Could be obviously.
They will. I was showing somebody last night these drinks, and I had to put some in the refrigerator because I've had one literally explode. Like I took the top off. It was hot in here. But I used to leave the AC off when I would go to work to save money. And the heat makes the yeast, you know, be more active. The carbon, the oxide, is pressure is wanting to expand out because it is hot. So between like and biology, it's just all working together. Make this thing like a ticking time bomb. So I opened it and it was like this gun. Like if you think of a gunshot, if somebody shot a gun near your head, that's what it sounded like. And the soda exploded all up the counters, all up the cabinets, and touched the ceiling. It was the craziest thing in the world. And I was so like, wow, that's so amazing, until I realized, yeah. Who's cleaning this up, Derek? It's me. Like,
hold on. Essentially, what's in it?
So it's depends on what
tea. It's a fermenting process.
Yeah, it's a fermenting process. So the ferment is, the base is somebody's tea.
Yeah.
Tea, right? So if I'm making a ginger beer, it's a heavy ginger extraction. I do a lot of ginger. I boil it down, some sugar. Sometimes I use some brown sugar. I'm not going to tell you the rest of the stuff I use because my secret recipe is the
blitz. Right.
Okay. The rest of y'all, when I do a Patreon and I do a recipe, then you'll learn, right?
We'll get the six pack or you'll just start selling it.
Look, I did at one point, but again, I was just like, I'd rather show people how to make it and have a good time. Maybe one day in the future, I'll be like, here's my recipe. Somebody make this and then I get money. But do all of that and I add the thing that's going to really kick off the fermentation. And again, fermentation, composting, it's all the same. I want to control this process to say, this is what I want it to have. I want it to decompose in my way and not rot. I don't want this to spoil. I don't want this to mildew. I want this to ferment. I want this to compost, right? And bokashi is a compost technique, but it's also a fermentation technique. So when it comes to the drinks, I add the SCOBY, the symbiotic cultures of bacteria and yeast, for a kombucha, right? Add that in, add the bits in or whatever, add the juice in or whatever was going on with that. With the ginger beer, the ginger bug, I add that in. The ginger bug is basically a cultivation of yeast, right? And then some ginger parts, or I add that in. I add into my bottle, open up the bottle, and over time, I'll see the bubbles forming. I'll see the fizz forming. So, and I reach without knocking anything off.
It's so interesting, Derek, because, like, how long does this process take?
So, depends on how, you know, much of a starter, they call it. So, the ginger bug, the SCOBY, whatever. Depends on how much of that you added in there, how active that was, and the temperature of your house, and then, like, the actual recipe. So, like, if when I add everything in and I'm doing video series on this, I try to make sure everything is like cool enough, because if I add like my starter to boiling hot water, it's going to kill an organism that's living. I don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah.
My house, even though I keep it around 74, 73 in here, to a lot of people, they're like, that's so hot. It's actually colder than you think. And during the winter months, I keep it cooler. But during the summer, especially, I can get to what I expect is a good ferment in a day or two. And there's one thing I have in the refrigerator that a drink was already foaming and bubbling in a day. It just literally was like, boom. I think I split like a half and half mix. The next day was like, pow, right? So it was like.
Oh. And it's like a fizzy, like when you drink it, it's like a fizzy soda.
It is. I'm going to have to open the refrigerator because I want the people to see this, David. I want the people to see.
I want to see too.
I have a video where I show it. Let's see. because I have a bunch of them out, and hopefully they'll do it. So this one's a good example. So on the side here of this bottle, this was a pineapple and various herb drink. Again, I can't tell you all my secrets. Right, you could pick the yeast that was left over on the bottom. That's what all that little gunk is, the dead yeast, some of the active yeast. So I'm going to mix this up a little bit so it's not looking as disgusting. Okay, there we go. And we do see some foam. We do see some fizz. Is it just for me shaking?
Yeah, totally.
And there was a little,
Oh, I heard it.
When you play that back, you're going to see. And again, it has that foamy fizziness. Now, for pineapple, for me, when it's a fruit flavor, when you're fermenting, depending on if you're using like a ginger bug or a kombucha or whatever, fruit flavors for me, they go into a way I don't want them to be because they taste like what I relate to beer or wine. Mm-hmm. I don't really like that in a drink. I like the initial start, but not where it goes. And then that one was barely audible, but again, they're in the refrigerator, so it calms them down. But if I leave it out for a couple hours and they get back to room temperature, pow, bang.
Sis, so interesting.
This one especially likes the foam over. They're like children. They have different personalities.
It's so interesting. How long have you been doing this? Like making the kombucha?
The ferments in general, I've technically been fermenting since I was a child because I used to mix stuff together and ferment in bottles. Play around with it. I didn't know what it was at the time.
Right.
When I came back to it, it's crazy how this happened. I've been some crazy plant kid my whole life. When I came back to it, I was still living with the ex, so it would have been 2014 maybe. So 10 years. And if I trace a Snapchat video back far enough, I can find videos where I really started experimenting with different herbs, different juices on a deeper level. Because I did it on and off since really I was a teen, like different teens. Wow. But making ferments like this since 20, I want to say maybe even 20. I might have started doing kombuchas in 20. Actually, I probably did them in the exile. So yeah, 2014, 2013.
That's so cool.
So,
My husband loves these fermenting videos of like the Chinese vegetables that are like 200 years fermenting. And I'm like, they're like generations of like, and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if I could. And he's like, seriously, if we were there and could try it, like you, he's like, I think this is so amazing. Like, we should do this. And I'm like,
So when you're thinking of like, any beer, and I need Budweiser in town. I need to figure out how to contact them and learn about them and some of them. I should probably do it with the local beer making people, like these local beer making processes, and really see like what are you doing. But I feel like they're doing like what I do on a large scale, where they're using that yeast from other ferments and are mixing it in. Right? I'm using this drink is so foamy. This one here, because I took. This isn't the one that's still warm. I took this one that was the problem child, okay? Redheaded, doing all types of stuff. It's a reference to a movie. 90s kids will get it. That was a problem child. I added that in, and I got that yeast up. All of those came from a ferment that I had growing SCOBYs that I started several months ago. And I got the SCOBYs nice and big, and I started doling it out and mixing and doing different teas until I started to get to this place of, okay, it doesn't really taste like vinegar anymore. It's tasting better. Let's keep it going. And now I have all these different bottles, and I'm like, you know, Dexter's Lab, just pouring and mixing and mixing.
Dexter's Lab.
I'm Derek. So where if you try it, you can't think of, oh my God, I want to get a 200-year-old piece of vegetable.
Yeah.
Technically, all of that stuff would have been taken out. But over time, that same yeast is a descendant, an ancestor, just like we are of people.
Yeah.
Somebody was using 200-300 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, talking about ancestry and, like, changing the world, really. Today, I just really dug deep into George Washington Clark and his legacy and who he was. I asked my husband, I was like, do you know? And he's like, of course, the peanut guy. And I was like, he was so much more than the peanut guy. Like, he had a statue, like, presented in his park, the name of his namesake.
Yes.
The only, I mean, not only the first black person, first black male to ever, but only presidents had the statue before. Like, I just love that he inspires you so much. Can I just ask you, like, what his legacy means to you and the things that you're doing? Like, he changed the landscape of agriculture to say, like, no, we cannot deplete the soil anymore. Generations and generations are just depleting the soil. Like, let's change it up and grow peanuts and sweet potatoes. I mean, but it was so much bigger than that. Like, he really, like, he was a scientist and knew what he was doing, and it's phenomenal. And that's why he's so beloved and honored, not just in the industry, but just in the world, because he's a phenomenal man. But
he is. That's a very big question. I think for me, to start off, there exists so many unsung heroes of black science, black STEM, that they may have did something that was magnificent and a white person got attributed for it. They may have not done anything that was significant and that made history. Some did do something significant and made history, and their names are out there if you search hard enough. And of course, there are those of the historic ancestry who pre and post the American slave trade were doing something great and were somebody's scientists in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. When it comes to those people, and as I've been lightly going deeper into different cultural, botanical, and horticultural life lessons, knowledge, science, and all of that jazz that actually are like, wow, like this relates to a culture, this actually has some scientific backing, blah, 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 blah. I've become inspired because it shows that and really showcases a difference than what we see. When people envision a botanist, even with George Washington Carver, right, they don't see him. They see anyone else. Some people may name Gregor Mendel, right? The pea guy, the one that was talking about the Punnett squares. They may reference Linnaeus. They may reference, there's a German one I can't remember the name of right now. But they may reference a series of white people, or they may just have in their mind a white man in a lab coat. And when I come around, not being dry by any personality standards whatsoever, I'm 6'2". I have these beautiful sexy locks, this gorgeous chocolate skin. They are forced to confront their own personal biases, right? And I can generally see from their reaction what kind of person they are, because some people are so, they don't understand that I read it that quick, but right. I clock it when they're like, you're a botanist? Like, for real? Like a botanist? Like a real botanist? A whole botanist? And now they want to know my academic transcript. So it's something where a George Washington Carver, when I dove deep into his life and his story some years ago, he inspires me by using what he had to get what he needed. He was a professor at the Tuskegee College. Especially in those times, black folks were not getting the appropriate resources that were equal or equitable even to their white counterparts in academic standards. Yeah. He had to write what they came up with. He was not only their professor, not only their botanist, but he was also the person that was writing the materials, making the materials, going out and finding the plants, teaching, making whatever machinery he had to make, and being all that he could be. And he had to, right? Yeah. So when I see people like him, I consider people who persevered regardless. So when I hear of Percy Julian, one of his apprentices, who studied, I believe it was the phytochemicals that are in plants that are relative to estrogens in our body, right? They generally come from soy. Those people had to be great and more than great, because we know black people, we have to be twice as much to get a fourth of the accolades. He had to be great. When I hear of Marie Clark Taylor. I feel like I mix her the name of Thomas Wyatt. Either way, woman named Marie. If I had my iPad over here, I would look it up, but it's across the room. We're not going to get up anymore. Marie, I see a woman who was a black woman, yeah, who was a pathologist who had to figure it out in a world that doubly hated her because of her race and her biological sex, right? And I see all of that. So to be a scientist in that timeline must have been maddening, because especially in this time wave, to be a black scientist is to have people look at me and they see my personality and my charisma and they think that I have nothing going on in the noggin.
And uniqueness and talent.
They think that there's nothing going on. And then when I start fixing and doing stuff, they're like, oh, how'd you do it? And then I show it to them and they're like, oh, wow, I wouldn't think of that. Of course you didn't. I'm always, my head won't shut up. That's the problem. If you would talk to me, maybe the other voices would stop. That's what I'm thinking. that's what it is. To experience the world of the black scientist now is very upsetting. It's very maddening. And I can have the liberty in most cases, even in North Carolina, can be scary and hurtful. But I have the ability to speak up more so than a person like George Washington Carver or Thomas Wyatt Clark. Thomas Wyatt Taylor, Marie Clark, what they wouldn't have been able to do, right? Of being lynched or being murdered, for having the house set on fire, or being beaten or whatever it was, and people getting
away. I mean, I don't even have any words after it because I just...
it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Black scientists in any kind of way, and people downing me and celebrating other white media. I thought about doing a podcast on it, and then like a Substack, and telling the stories and renaming people one day.
Yeah. I mean, Derek, I saw it in New York all the time, working hair and fashion. I would see a huge name hairdresser get credit for these amazing braids that took hours while everyone was doing all the other girls, take ownership of the braids, you know. Some big name white hairstylist takes the credit for these beautiful braids while their assistant, you know.
Sad.
It is.
It's so sad. I didn't mean to bring spirit down.
But like, I mean, but this is why I'm glad that you are holding space and this plant, you know, even it's just like our little planty corner of Instagram, you know, you're holding space in it and people are listening, and some of my favorites, like Lekka Queen, you know, beloved by Lekka Queen. On the Shelf, I love her. Jane Perrone. I listen to her often. I love that you're sharing this message and also, you know, standing strong about all of BS. Yeah, botany BS is what I called it today. I'm going to, you know, coin that.
You need to, because you can't grow plants without a little BS.
Right?
Really good, Derek. I'll let you have that one. You go ahead and take that one.
Okay, cool. Thanks. I appreciate that. All right. Anything else that... you want to share, you know, do you have anything coming up that you want the listeners, the people, the plant people to know?
I'm going to be at the Southeast Plant Show in Georgia, Atlanta, Hot Atlanta, at the end of June. What is the date exactly? Derek doesn't remember right now, but it's going to be at the end of June, right? Sometime in July, I believe the 17th, I'm going to be at Martha's Vineyard. Funny story. I thought Martha's Vineyard was where Martha Stewart lived. And she,
I love that.
I referenced early in the story, she also thought the same thing. And I feel like I got it from her somewhere. Maybe my Aunt Elena, God rest her soul. But I thought that that's where she was. Apparently, that is not the case. If you thought the same, please
DM. She's in the Hamptons.
She might be there. She might have a vineyard. We don't know. But at the end of the day, I'm gonna be out there.
Yeah, I'm sure she does. I'm sure she does. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh my God, what is the name of that? I'm gonna be at an arboretum, and the name the Polly Hill Arboretum. There we go. I'm going to be there. I believe that's the name of it. Yes, I'm gonna be there, and I think those are the only two places I'm going to be at right now. But if you want me to come to your location, please DM me or email me and we can talk from there. If you want me to be on your podcast and your show, I'm very easy to reach. And unless Instagram is hiding your message, like it hid yours. It does that lately. I don't know why. I think it's the new thing that they're playing around with, because it's been happening for several months for me. And I never get it in my inbox or my request folder. So it's like, if any of you have messaged me and you're like, he never responded, that's why. I never got it. Just like comment where and let me know you messaged me and I'll look at it. And that's it. I'll be on any show, any TV show, any podcast. If you
where can people find you on social media?
I am the Chocolate Botanist on pretty much all the social media that matters. X is slowly dying a slow death, so we're not going to talk about that one. Botanist there. But if you go to my website, thechocolatebotanist.com, it'll lead you to all of my social media proclivities. I am most Instagram, but I am everywhere, and I've probably been on one of your favorite podcaster shows, and now I'm here with Wade, so we're here. And
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Other thing coming up is I'm starting a podcast, Melanated Botany, with all me, Stephen Jonte. We're going to be talking about blackness and plants, all that comes with that. And it's going to be dope. It's going to be coming out very soon. So you'll be able to hear my tones and his melodious tones. We're going to have guests. And we're going to really be centering blackness along with people of color. And we're going to have really anybody on that can talk something good about plants, especially, again, those science people who need to speak the facts. So
that's what we're doing. What is that account called? It's
Melanated Botany. We don't have an account just yet. We do have two, but we haven't put anything on it yet. I think we recorded six or so episodes. We're just trying to get a drop date.
And there's numerous hosts.
There's me and Stephen Jonte, who is a plant biologist in the Rhode Island area, the New Jersey area, and he and I had met on the LinkedIn of all places. We from the job I used to work, met some of my co-workers from the company's home base in Canada. He met some of them at a conference. So he was like, well, I wonder if is there any black people that work there. And he searched and searched, and he didn't have to search long. He found me. And we have been connected ever since. And he's been a true blue guy. He is a phenomenal grower, very knowledgeable plant biologist. And the thing we just want to be able to show is we are not necessarily dry people that are scientists. We are not boring by far.
Let's close on this. I mean, we're two men. We probably shouldn't be talking about this. But you do have a degree and I don't. So you can talk about menstrual blood and not be crucified for it because we are two men. But menstrual blood on your houseplants.
So as a person, number one, a degree is not a sign of knowledge. It just means I paid to get trained in something. I spent a lot of money to do it, and I know you ain't down to yourself, but I know some people will consider me elitist because I have a degree, and it just means I went and I had the resource, and that's it, and I learned something. And without that resource, I have the opportunity to learn something great, too. And either way, both of us have the opportunity to learn something insane. When it comes
I appreciate you saying that, but I respect you so much for having the knowledge, because it really, I went to school, I'm a cosmetologist, but to study and to become passionate and like have it be your lifelong mission, like it's very respectful. And what you're talking about, and I love that you share it in such a kind and funny way.
Unless they piss me off now.
I know. Homeboy's pissed you off because he lies so much, right?
And, unless they piss me off. Some people get it real bad. So menstrual blood. If you are a person that menstruates, you are not putting your menstrual blood into your plant. And again, the reason I tell people is when your plants are getting nutrition, they've got nutrition from a source that's decomposed in some way, right? That decomposition process is somebody's fungi, right? A mold, a mildew, a fungal pathogen that took it out, or again, series of mushrooms, shelf fungi, whatever. Something over time broke it up. Another decomposition, it was eaten, okay? I eat another animal, my waste comes out, that waste, or I eat plants, whatever I ate, it comes out of me, and that is now broken down in a way that is amenable for the plant, right? Or it was somebody's compost or a bokashi-style fermentation. But the thing about rot is, any of those composition processes, is they take some amount of time to make that nutrition available for your plants. And there's other things that could go horribly wrong while you're waiting for that time to pass. So when you're taking a blood solution that does have some form of nitrogen in it, some amount of nitrogen in it,
it's in a spray bottle, mind you.
But I've seen the spray bottles. I've seen
the spray bottle. I said, girl, what are you about to do?
Look, the spray bottle, they have giant jars of it. Of the fermented pee, that's the one you got to really look for, because fermented urine, and they put it on I've seen people, they have a tub of the menstrual blood because they free bleed into like a towel or something, and they go and they rinse it out. And again, if that's what you do, phenomenal.
Yeah.
But not give your plants, because again, that nitrogen that's bound in your blood has not been broken down. A lot of people want to reference like blood meal or other blood founded foundational products that are used in agriculture, but those were processed in some ways decomposing position to make them change up. So I talk about decomposition. A lot of people are like, well, I mean, it's going to decompose anyway. And again, it's like, if I leave all of my doors and windows open with no screens, there's going to be more of a chance for flies to get in and other things I don't want to get into my house than if I just open the door, close it as quickly as I can, right? Mm-hmm. When you are leaving your planters going, and this plant looks a little sad, this is a philodendron red, oh my God, I can't remember the name, but it's a philodendron species. When you are putting something like blood into this soil, you are opening up the door for a pathogen that you don't want, some fungi, some root rot that you don't want, to say, hey, look at what this human did for me, right? No. And you don't want a mildew smell in your house. You don't want an odor smell in your house, because some fungi can be deadly. Can be deadly, right? So when it comes to that, if you have to do something with it because you're like, I'm not going to just let this product go to waste, then get a compost pile if you have it and pour it into the compost pile. And over time, it will be broken down and it'll add something to your soil. But it's not anything that people say, especially when it's rich with nitrogen. If it was rich with nitrogen, like fish emulsions, you pour that on your plants too much and they die.
Yeah.
It's not giving your plants anything. Just because
it's like the kombucha, you know, it's kind of like that. Like it has to have this process to ferment and create.
Exactly. Yeah. If you were able to just immediately make all of your own nitrogen-rich products from menstrual blood, and again, there's so many people that menstruate in the world, we would have some way of trying to capture that menstrual, right? Just because your plants, when you poured this blood, this banana water, or whatever it was on your plants, and your plants didn't say, and they didn't die, that doesn't mean that it's worked. It just means you lucked out. Your plants you could do that next time and you think it's something else. You're like, oh, it must be the 5G and the crystals. Well, no, it's not. It's all the stuff for your plant.
Yeah. Did you say 5G and the crystals?
That's what I said, 5G and the crystals. I like to say enough stuff in a podcast to piss off five group people if I can. I like to really spread the disdain for me over as many people as possible.
I love it. Thank you so much, Derek. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
I know that this podcast can continue because I didn't think I was going to do 10 episodes. So we'll have to do it again and maybe do something more niche to one topic or something. But I love this. This was lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And next time we should get Steven on.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Yeah. I'm very, very excited. Once you get this Instagram, like, I will post it, obviously. But everyone, you're beloved by so many in the plant community. So everyone, follow the Chocolate Botanist. Thank you so much. Until next time, everyone. Hey, plant people, thank you so much for tuning in to the 10th episode of the Plants by Wade Lee podcast. I hope you are enjoying this podcast as much as I am doing creating it. I don't think I had laughed so hard than I did interviewing Derek, the chocolate botanist. Make sure to follow him on all of his social medias. Next week, we have a very special guest, author of Happy Plants, Happy You, Camille Bell Hill, also known as the Plant Blurred on social media. We have an exciting conversation that you don't want to miss. Be kind to yourself and others. And remember, if you want that plant, buy that plant.